are listening to Heart of the Ark podcast from the Office for Evangelization in the Archdiocese of Newark. We're coming to you to bring knowledge and some courage as we voyage through this life as missionary disciples of our Lord Jesus Christ. My name is Jennifer Benke, and I'm co-hosting this podcast with my friend and colleague, Father John Gordon. And welcome to the Heart of the Ark. My name is Jennifer Benke, and I am here today with Paul Jarzembowski. He's back, listeners, you may remember, in March to talk about his book, Hope from the Ashes for Lent. And Paul, in addition to working for the USCCB and being an incredible theologian and leader in our Catholic thought here in the United States, also has made time to write another book for Hope for the Holidays. I don't know how you do it, Paul, but thank you so much for coming back and speaking to us.
My pleasure.
We just started briefly, and I was mentioning that I'm working from home today because it's election day and the kids are home. One is on the Catholic school has a remote day, but the public schools are closed. So I've got one in class and one catching up on homework that she's been putting off since marching band season started. So I'm kind of making sure I'm managing mom at home today as well. As so talk to me about this crazy time of year and where are you in your holiday prep?
You know, I'll tell you, you know, the holidays really kind of start like Labor Day, maybe even earlier, as you know, this kind of succession of holidays that just kind of roll one on top of the other at this time of year. So like everybody else, I'm recovering from pumpkin spice season and moving my way into peppermint bark season. And so right. If you could put a little bit of a kind of the Starbucks angle on everything,
right.
But the holidays, you know, as I've looked at it, it's either it gets so inundated with like the happiness and the excitement and the joy and all that. But I found that for many people, the holidays are not exactly the easiest time. They, as much as we kind of coat ourselves with the peppermint bark or the pumpkin spice or the festivities that are a part of the season, that there is sometimes an inner hollowness that people have and can sometimes get even more frayed by the holidays. The very thing that is meant to kind of give us a break are sometimes the things that fray our edges even further. I mean, I think especially, you know, in different parishes you work with parents, and the parents have the pressure of Christmas shopping and making sure that that whatever holiday is coming up is just perfect for their kids. But then added to that is all the other responsibilities. Like if family is coming to visit, you've got to clean the house, you got to cook the food, you got to make sure everything is set, you know, so there's all these other things that just layer on top of it. And then we're told, oh, just be happy about the holidays. And it sometimes can just be, it can kind of break us sometimes. And so I wrote this book mostly because I really felt for those individuals, and I recognize that a lot of them struggle through it, and how to still find hope, what we're supposed to be finding in the holiday season, how to still find it while also being mindful and not just kind of pushing it to the side or ignoring it, but dealing with it head on, walking with God through the struggles, and in that finding the hope. So that's kind of the impetus for me writing it. And God knows every holiday season, I could use a little bit of my own medicine. So I also wrote it for myself. I had to journey myself through it. And it's a good, I'm sure this book will be for me a good reminder to go, oh yeah,
right.
Don't get so caught up.
You know, that's really an incredible way to start this, because I really appreciate in the beginning of this book that you start right there with the people who are feeling hollow. And I think that the more we Starbucks all of our holidays, right? The more we, not to pick on one corporation.
I know, but, poor Starbucks.
Poor Starbucks. But the more we commercialize the holidays and we externalize all the things we're going to do, we really lose the things that we are supposed to be becoming in
right.
in this time of remembrance. You really start, I took it right out of in your foreword here about the annual encroachment often mirrors a societal erosion of hope. That sentence for me was just like, yeah, because And I've always blessed the church for giving us the celebration of the incarnation in the darkest time of year, right? That the light of the world comes into, excuse me, the darkest part of our annual year here in the Northern Hemisphere. Now, that's not to say that there's not a parallel in the Southern Hemisphere. It's just not my culture where I come from. But I'm always so taken by the ways in which our fathers of faith have helped us navigate this darkness with a recentering on the second coming in the beginning of Advent and all the readings at the end. Now we're in the 32nd week of, I'm already planning next week. So 32nd.
It's the 30s now in ordinary.
Right, right. Right. Christ the King is approaching, right? That's a big holiday. So I'm looking at these ways in which we start to focus on the second coming before preparing ourselves again for the annual commemoration of the first coming. And I bless the church for having this hopeful season in the midst of this darkness. So how do you see that in your work, where people are at, either from the synod or for the youth and young adults that you work most closely with? Like where are people this year, even more in some ways than others?
Yeah. So my title is, I'm the associate director for the laity at the USCCB. So, you know, basically I say, I joke around that my title says that basically everybody except for the clergy is kind of what, you know, how do our bishops engage with this? That's my work there. I come from, my background is related in youth and young adults, but now my focus is pretty much the laity. And so one of the areas that we're working with is the mental health crisis that we're going through as a culture around the world. So I've been part of the leadership surrounding the helping our bishops with our National Catholic Mental Health Campaign. And so, and the mental health certainly takes its toll, especially as it gets darker. I mean, whether it's seasonal depression or whether it's clinical issues that are persistent, but only get exacerbated and amplified around this time. We also work in our work with the elderly and grandparents. And so for them, there's often times of loss. They're seeing their friends and family pass on. They're experiencing loss of, you know, either memories or just the loss of experiences that perhaps as their children move away from home, they're empty nesters. As they become seniors, they, you know, they lose that connection to family sometimes that for much of their life has been a source of light and hope for them. So many of the populations, and then with the synod, in that there is a little bit of a glimmer of hope there because, you know, we are seeing the church say to the laity, you are valuable. You have a voice. You are co-responsible with us. So there is that. But the reality of many of parish life, of diocesan life, of anything around our world today is, you know, sometimes whereas we might see like this ideal being talked about on the national or international level, the reality sometimes is a lot harsher right at home.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we're going right now through several international crises, you know, with Israel and Palestine, with Ukraine and Russia, and just the politics in our polarization, even in our own country, is just, you know, it's tearing apart. So a lot of people are feeling that there's a lot of suspicion and things like that, that we're seeing this kind of tribal politics that exists sometimes. I'm seeing it in my work. I'm seeing that's what many of the laity, with many of the young people, are wrestling with, what seniors and the elderly are working through. So in my work, I see that, but I also see that there are glimmers of hope that do get, you know, that are possible. Sometimes they may seem farther out or, you know, even farther distance wise, like, well, that's great that's happening in Rome, or it's great what's happening in Washington, but right here at home, it's a different matter. And so we get that, we recognize that. And yeah, it's in my work, I try to help ministry leaders across the country be able to be kind of purveyors of that hope in some way.
I can't commend you enough for that. I mean, I'm looking at the role of the laity now in the synod documents, and I'm just like, yes, this is what we need. Now, just how do we execute that in our own little areas of influence, right? Like, you know, you're looking at the whole big picture of the whole USCCB. I'm just the associate director of evangelization in Newark. But, you know, I'm a pastoral minister in a tiny little parish in the next diocese over. So like, I can only control the hopefulness within this community. And sometimes the communities that you only have influence on are the people that you lock in at night when like the last one, walk the dog, locks the door, right? So like, those are the only people you can influence. So I really appreciate, though, the way your book really is practical, and it's using the language of where people are at right now to get them to think about the bigger things. So, you know, you use the Scrooge Christmas Carol story as kind of the big framework of the book. But within that, you start like, how do we get silence? And you give like six places that people find silence. And it's like, yes, I need to be reminded that I could take a walk. You know, it's practical. One, and I'm, you know, working on a degree from Loyola in New Orleans. You give one of the most concise 6-bullet point Ignatian spirituality in a single page that I've seen in anywhere. So, and you give it twice, which again, I needed it twice in the book. So I was like, oh, thank God, I didn't have to flip back for it. These are like really important, practical, helpful tips for people to engage with their own spirituality, but also be reminded on how to engage with the people right around them that they have influence over.
I have to give credit to my wife for really pushing me to the practical. You know, working in Washington, working in theology, I'm kind of prone to the abstract thought, but, you know, she always reminds me, yeah, but come on, buddy, that, you know, get your head out of the clouds. How does this really affect it? And, you know, it's true. Part of the hopelessness stems from the fact that sometimes things, especially in church, in spirituality, we talk sometimes at this 30,000 foot view, which is wonderful, but it assumes that we have the time and the energy and the wherewithal to take that 30,000 and try and bring it down to our local level. Perhaps in previous generations, people had that time and resources and wherewithal to do that. But today, in a time-starved culture, you need to give people the practical, like, okay, here's how. And then if somebody's like, look, I have time to think this through and I can adapt it, great, fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I found that providing some of people with the practical at least gets one step that they don't have to worry about, that they can say, okay, I need silence. That's a great abstract idea. So how do I do that? Oh, that's great. Thank you. So by providing it, you know, I'm following my wife's admonition to me to give me the concrete. And so I wanted to offer that in there. Again, I need that for myself. I don't allow much time for my own self to be silent. So as I was writing this book, I had to be like, I had to write the thing and say, okay, Paul, practice what you preach. So do it, you know. And in these moments, I found like, oh yeah, I guess doing this does help. And that is the first step to any of the suggestions, the practical ideas or anything. That silence is that first step. I mean, it's amazing how little we give that gift to ourselves, the holidays. And yet the holidays are filled with, if we allow it, they are filled with occasions that can truly transform us. I mean, it sounds silly sometimes, but like on a fall day, just take a walk in silence and wonder at God's creation and the leaves that are falling around you. It sounds like something a self-help book would tell you to do, but sometimes for our own spirituality, we need to just be quiet, be still, and to just allow God to speak to us in the silence, because I think that's part of the hope, is just sometimes getting rid of the clutter.
I'm kind of going through a large transition, and this maybe I'll cut this, but I just got married this past month. After both of us getting our annulments, we were able to actually stand before God and do it right.
Congratulations.
So thank you. But because I've noticed that since we got married, like both of us, not really without talking about it, although I said it is community property, so I can throw it out now, have started to like pare down our lives of stuff. Like, you know, there's been a lot of bags going out the door to donations, and getting back to kind of the silence and the clearing the clutter important time of year is really, you know, again, connected to that autumn, getting rid of the things that we don't need. The leaves don't need to be on the trees anymore. Now
right.
the trees can go dormant and kind of they focus inwards. Maybe we should too, right?
It's this wintering that I think in a way, this idea of wintering, mm-hmm. of kind of in a way letting ourselves be reflective of the very nature that God has around us, you know, just kind of cleansing ourselves of this so that when looking further ahead, when we get to Lent and Easter, that we can kind of be reborn again in that. And we've kind of rid ourselves of the things that are clogging up this. And I know some people might say, oh, but yeah, that's great, but I don't have time to take time. What do I sacrifice? Which is going to now the silence is stressing me out.
Right.
And I will admit it does require a bit of discipline, but I think if we really are honest with ourselves, we will discover that we can carve those times out. And one of the ideas I gave is in a car on your way to work or on your way to the grocery store, you know, whether it's a 5-minute drive or a 30-minute drive or an hour drive or one of those long commutes into the city, wherever you're going, what if you were to just take that time and just be silent? No radio, no nothing, just be in your own thoughts and prayer. Like there are moments in our day that we sometimes overlook that actually can be, and don't have to stress us out trying to find, all right, I got to wait until I find the right time to be silent, I have the right time to pray. There are moments, whether we realize it or not, I think that God gives us in our days that we just need to just say, okay, yeah, I admit it. I need to use that time.
That is on the days when people aren't listening to the podcast on their commute, you know.
Exactly. Well, yeah,
right,
that would
exactly.
be the next
yeah.
day. The next day.
Yeah, exactly.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. No,
tomorrow
right.
do that.
Use this first and then tomorrow listen to
my apologies. I'm talking to a podcaster here.
This past Saturday was wonderful. It was the catechetical convocation for the Archdiocese of Newark. I don't know how many hundreds of catechists they had, but English and Spanish track with presenters in both languages. It was just a wonderful day to like, I got to stand at the table and just see people and say, hi, how can we help? You know, and it was just, for me, it was the first time I really got to do that because I was hired after COVID. So it was the first time I really got to be in that situation. It was just so wonderful to be with people and see so many catechists taking the time to renew their own spiritual lives and think about the ways in which they could better serve the children and the adults and RCIA candidates, OCIA candidates of our archdiocese. It was just like, yes, yes, do that. Yes. It was just such a wonderful day on this past Saturday. And it was a beautiful fall day. They could have gone, the pumpkins were probably on half price. They could have been, you know, raking leaves, but they spent the day kind of thinking about how to bring God closer to our families. And it was just such a beautiful day to spend with people. Not only do you kind of use the, I want to say like the meta narrative of the Christmas Carol, but you use a lot of other narrative devices that are within kind of the public consciousness of Christmas movies. I appreciate the Bruce Willis inclusion there as well, but
Die Hard is a Christmas movie. I will defend that one, though I think I may have just lost half your podcast listeners who go, no.
No, I'm sure that they can find the Christmas even in that. But I thought that the inclusion of a lot of these different secular narratives really helps us open the door to people who are coming to the church and are not sure that they're churchy people, right? They might just be coming into the church because grandma and grandpa expect them to go to church with them before they go to dinner or, you know, like, so how do we make our community practically parishes, people in the pews? How do we evangelize as these communities when people are just joining us for whatever reason?
Well, I think you know, part of it is you raise the idea that there is that the secular experience of Christmas, while we might bemoan the commercialization, the secularization, there is still that something about it. Still, even the most cynical Hallmark movie kind of thing might be, people will find a sense of spirituality and faith in a variety of ways. And so it starts, I think, first of all, it starts within the family and it starts within our homes. We likely have relatives or friends who may not necessarily engage with faith, but do connect with some of those secular things, whether it's a Hallmark movie, Die Hard, or Charlie Brown Christmas, or, you know, seeing Coco, you know, for Dia de los Muertos, whatever it might be, there may be a connection where they find a sense of hope, a sense of joy, a sense of light, and it's walking with them through it. It's talking with them to it, you know, like engaging them in what does give them moments of joy, even if it does seem like, even if it's not faith related, if it is related to a sense of renewed hope in their lives, start there. And then from that conversation, you can build out from that. But it kind of has to start where they are. And many of them are in a place that we maybe once were, or maybe we have forgotten about, but that's where they're at the moment. So let's meet them at that place. And the holidays is kind of this liminal period where people are drawn to a sense of spirituality, even if they can't articulate it exactly in terms that's biblical or ecclesial or anything like that. But they know that there's a sense of spirituality. There's a sense of the sacred about this time of year. So this is a great opportunity for those who are active in their faith to find ways to open that door. And the secular even provides some outlets for that, that we can use.
Yeah, for certain. A community memorial. Like, let's just say there's a tragedy has happened, and we know that there's tragedies around. And the community memorial includes a candlelight vigil or the bringing of flowers or teddy bears to a or right. some sort of remembrance and honoring a victim with their picture, that sort of thing. Like, that comes from our faith tradition of honoring the saints and having feast days and then the Feast of All Saints, that like we just passed that. And to me, I can't tell you how many memorial things that are happening in my community right now, especially with Israel and the conflict in Israel and Palestine, like those moments of spirituality that are secular, but also demand a sacredness of them that is a little bit more universal. That's really important to just reconnect with, like, oh yeah, that is Catholic. But how do we step into that with the people from the community, right?
Yeah. I mean, Veterans Day, you know, we have coming up, Thanksgiving. You know, these are secular national times, but yet they draw people to a faith-like element. There is a spirituality, there's an inner spirituality that kind of pervades American culture that I think we can work with. And part of it is really just starting in talking about the synodal process. The first thing we do is just start listening, just start talking to people and finding, you know, asking people where it is they find that sense of peace, that sense of hope, that sense of light in their lives. Like, you know, what brought you to that? Why are you honoring the dead here? And it just getting them to engage in that conversation, even if it doesn't move them to start going to church tomorrow,
right?
It establishes us as a trusted companion on their journey. And continuing those conversations with them over time, eventually they're going to discover what gives you hope and what gives you light, and that it will naturally evolve into that kind of conversation where faith and invitation can take place. But part of it is this first step of just kind of talking to people about it. And as I said, this time of year, there's a lot of things happening. And then with those memorials, you see, there's this underpinning that is that yeah, is very faith adjacent. Whether it's that, you know, I went to the wedding of a family member who actually had gotten married during COVID by the Justice of the Peace, but they they wanted a ritual wedding. Now, they're not religious people, but they wanted some sort of ritual for their marriage that wasn't just the justice of the peace. And to me, there was such great joy in being able to accompany her to this family member, because she desired a sense of sacredness and ritual and ceremony that and I thought, oh, there's such a desire, an inner desire for something that's more than just we've signed a legal document, but we want something that brings people together, that has a ritual that our parents have gone through. You know, there was all these kinds of things that I think draw people closer. Now I have a great opportunity to have dialogue with my family members who went through that, and to say, yeah, let's talk about that. What brought you? Why did you do that? And uncovering that and unpacking that is a great mystagogy of sorts that can happen, that can kind of unpack it for deeper meaning and maybe draw people closer to a conversation that's more explicitly faith related.
To use an analogy that we started before, you know, it's wintertime. Might not be the best time to try to force a plant to grow, but we're planting the seed, we're planting the bulb in the earth, and we're going to like keep it going through the winter and see if it has a bloom time in the future. Yeah.
That's a great time to be hopeful. I mean, you know, where, you know, we might bemoan some of the secularization of Christmas and the holidays. Where most other people see kind of despair of, oh, no one's doing the church thing anymore, I see glimmers of hope. I see, yeah, but charitable giving and you know, engagement in works of service and justice increases around the holidays, and families, you know, like there's reunions of families, and as I say, even that Hallmark movie stirs the heartstrings of the most cynical person and might make them go, oh, I need to do something deeper. And I look at them as all occasions of people wanting to reconnect with something deeper, something meaningful, and look at them rather, instead of looking at it as places of despair, looking at it as places of opportunities of hope, that, oh, there's an opportunity there to really draw someone deeper into the mystery. And the holidays are great times to do that. Just like in our previous conversation, we talked about the spirituality that Lent, that people around, again, part of it, that wintering that happens, you know, that introspection, people are more open to spirituality as the, you know, the seasons get darker, and including from Advent on through to Lent. So this is a great opportunity to really talk to people about something that is there, even if it's only expressed in secular ways. There is something deeper that's an opportunity for us to plant seeds, or even just recognize the seeds that's there, and to kind of build from that.
Absolutely. I think that's a really important, you know, we're all in this, you know, trying to build up the kingdom with, you know, as a Christian, I want to take as many people with me to heaven. Right. I believe that hard that I want all my neighbors, even the, you know, the truck across the street, the guys that doing my work on the construction across the street. Like, I want everybody to go to heaven. So like, then how do I foster the growth in every person around me? And it has to be by being a welcoming person, by being an inviting person to talk to, not being a Scrooge, not being a Grinch, right? Like, these are other people that we encounter sometimes in the pew when we're stopping by in a church we've never been to. We don't want to be the Scrooge or the Grinch that people encounter. We want to be an open, welcoming presence. We want to make space for people in the church. We want to invite them to a coffee hour. We want to make sure that they know they're welcome to these parish events, because there's more things happening in the community. I mean, as a music director, I want the whole community to show up to the concert, right? Like, come, you know, like there's no reason you can't just sit in a church and listen to a choir sing Christmas carols. That's, you know, sometimes that's all people need is to find a space of light and peace. And
That's great. Yeah, no. And I think, you know, the fact that you even talked about music is it's such an underpinning to this season. You know, no other time of year even has a soundtrack as much as holidays do, right. You know? And so, And again, that's yet another occasion to connect with people. You know, why is it that song, you know, and even both secular and sacred people, one of the most popular song around the holidays is Silent Night. Mm-hmm. That is the number one song. And it's not just Christians who are liking that song. This is a song that, you know, so what a great, like, if you're talking to somebody about your favorite Christmas movie, like, you know what, I really love Silent Night. And if they haven't been to church in a while, what a great opening to a conversation. You know, we always wonder, like, oh, how can I enter into a conversation with somebody who's not that religious? Like, these are excuses. This music is a great opportunity. And even if it's not Silent Night, even if it's Rocking Around the Christmas Tree or something like that, let's talk a little bit about that. What gives you joy in that? Why does that make you, why do you really enjoy that song or whatever? Right. And chances are it may move to a conversation of faith.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, even I've had conversations with people before about their favorite Christmas ornament, like their favorite tree ornament. Right. And, you know, maybe it's, it brings back a vacation they went on, or maybe it's something that they got from their grandmother and they speak about, you know, that relationship, or, you know, those are times when we can like bring people back to a, well, what is really important? You know, we're connecting on that deeper level. And then if they're willing to share with us, like those are times when we can say, you know, like if you like Christmas lights, oh, you should see what we do outside. You know, when we stand out on the front of the church and sing Silent Night on Christmas Eve with candles, like, why don't you just stop by, you know, just stop by the outside of church. You don't have to come inside, you know, like nobody's dragging you inside, you know, but there's cookies downstairs.
I mean, this is a great opportunity. I mean, there's a lot of stuff. And the fact that you do, like, you know, even people who do concerts around the holidays, you know, I mean, that's a great opportunity to draw people into the sacred space. You know, foods, you know, I mean, you know, people have different favorite foods around the holidays. Churches can do things around that. We have parish halls, you know. So, I mean, you know, and if there's a particular charism or a particular culture or nationality of your community, you know, raise that up at this time of year, and it might invite people into a sacred space.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're looking for many times, is how do we bring people to find their relationship with God amplified by a sacred space. And as I said, as much as people bemoan the holidays, or, you know, it's kind of broad, the way it's kind of grown almost out of proportion in our culture today, look at it as an opportunity.
Yeah.
Look at it as an
opportunity. Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's looking at the holiday with hope, you know, because I know those of us, I think we used this in our last conversation, those of us who work in parish life are like, oh, here come the creasters, here come the people who will only show up back. And we can get so jaded in pastoral ministry. We can get so like, if only these people came every Sunday, we wouldn't be worried about the lights, right? Like renewing our own hope. And I think that's the other part of this book that I love. And I loved in your other book, Hope from the Ashes, that you remind the people in parish ministry, whether it's the clergy or the laity, that they've got to do the work of renewal in their own lives before they can be the renewal we need in the church. And I think that's really important in just in terms of evangelization. It's a constant discipleship of renewal.
What inspired me was really seeing the struggle that people go through at this time of year. And the people who I'm observing who are going through that struggle are priests, are bishops, are lay ministers, are deacons, are religious sisters. The people who I'm talking to in my regular work about evangelization, about ministry, about accompaniment, and they themselves are dealing with a lot of heavy stuff, you know. So like, it was those people who really I saw in the people that people would say, how can I give, how can I share our faith when I'm struggling with my faith myself? Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow, yeah, even our leaders are themselves struggling. So we have to start with ourselves. It also, the how shall I say it, the more functionary aspect of this, yes, it's good for our own souls. But if we learn, if we can wrestle with things within ourselves and recognize our own brokenness, it allows us to be empathetic to those who are on the margins who we're trying to evangelize, so that we have empathy can draw us closer to their story and makes us a better evangelizer. Yes. Because we know that it's not an us and them, because if we think our lives are perfect, but their lives are not, and we're trying to save them or something like that, then it's not going to work. But if we recognize that we're broken and the people that we're inviting to Christ are broken, then that empathy will allow us to have an evangelization encounter that's deeper, because now we're operating as companions on the journey rather than almost like a teacher-student kind of relationship. Like that's not, but we often approach evangelization from this, I've got something, you don't have something, let me shower that what I have onto you so that you'll get to Christ. That's not a good evangelization strategy. But when we're walking side by side and my brokenness can speak to your brokenness, then we can both encounter Christ together. And in a way, maybe it's the evangelization for you for the first time, but for me, it's a re-evangelization. So we approach the altar together. Absolutely. And I think I think by going through this experience ourselves of finding hope within ourselves, the holidays, it'll make us better evangelists, because we'll be able to empathize with the people with whom we're evangelizing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know if there's anything I want to say to add to that, because that was just, yeah, it speaks very deeply to me. I have, this time last year, I was just recently diagnosed with a very serious condition. And at Christmas time, I received some news that was like, this could be your last Christmas. Last Christmas. And it's okay, because I'm here, right? I'm just married and things are really, really good. But I remember last Christmas putting things away and thinking like, is this the last time I'm going to touch these Christmas ornaments? And how are the kids going to feel if they're opening them next year without mom? You know, and that was like such a powerful pain that I carried all the way through. God is good. The world of medicine is ever improving, and the world, like, things are good. I'm doing really well this year, but that hope this year is just, it's a completely different, like, I've always loved Christmas, but this year it's like, oh yeah, I don't need anything, because this year I'm really focused on the things that are really important, you know, and so many people in ministry are carrying those weights too. You know, as you said, our clergy are dealing, our clergy's aging, our communities are aging, and we've lost people this year that it hurts, and you know, and so many people are carrying these heavy burdens that if we just remember that Christ is going to bring us all to perfection.
Thank you for sharing your story. And I think your story reminds us of the fact that throughout our lives, if we're honest with ourselves, throughout our lives, God has fulfilled our hopes, sometimes in very minor ways. Like, you know, we all, you know, maybe we were hoping for a job and we got the job, mm-hmm. or we hoped for a family and the Lord blessed us with a family. Or maybe it was, in your instance, you know, there was the hope that we can make it through this medical crisis that we're going through, and God provides. Mm-hmm. And so God throughout our lives has given us moments where we can look at the holidays. It's a great time to reflect back on that and to go, like, you know, kind of like going with the ghost of Christmas past, mm-hmm. you know, and saying, like, leading you on a little tour of your own, like, where were those moments where God fulfilled minor hopes, major hopes in your past? It's a reminder that whatever crisis you're going through right now, you can make it through, because God has always shown that he will provide, even in the most hopeless circumstances, he will provide. And whatever darkness we're going through right now, we have this sure belief because, number one, we have evidence. If you're a doubting Thomas and you need the evidence, God has given us examples throughout our lives saying that, yeah, it does. It can happen, and it can make it through, because oftentimes when we're going through the crisis at the present moment, it feels like the worst. And sometimes it is very bad, mm-hmm. or sometimes it's not, but it were perceived like that because, you know, we look back and go, oh, the problems of the past weren't as bad as they are right now. Well, the reason that we live in the rearview mirror is because we've seen how God got us through that.
Yes.
But we don't know the end of this story that we're currently in. So it is the worst because we don't know the end.
Right.
But we have the assurance that God says, I've done this before and I will do it again in one way or another. There will be something at the end of this. And we know that even at the end, where our life is full of these cycles. Mm-hmm. And the holidays are a good reminder. You mentioned before, we're kind of in this going through the end of time as we get to Christ the King. And then we go, and then we think, reflect back on the first advent of Jesus in our world. And that cycle continuously repeats itself. And so we know that the end, that everything will always, even if it's on a downswing, God always ends every story on the upswing.
Oh, absolutely. Know? Yeah.
Even if the next time is a downswing, it's going to go back up again. Ultimately, in our ultimate course is that we believe that the final word is life in heaven with the Lord.
Yes.
Which is the ultimate upswing. So no matter how bad this year is, we'll know that even if it's our last, the final upswing is heaven and life with the Lord for all eternity. And that is the ultimate upswing. So no matter what we're going through, God has always got something greater on the horizon. And we just need to find that within our lives to see it.
What you just said reminded me of my favorite. Okay. So you said, what are people's favorite Christmas carols? That's a really hard one for me because I'm a musician, but my favorite part of the gospel of Luke, of the birth of Christ, my favorite part is not Mary's line. It's what Elizabeth says to Mary at the visitation. Blessed are you who believed that what the Lord spoke unto you would be done. Like Mary was full of hope, and Elizabeth more than anybody else recognized that, like, God is promised and God will deliver. And you have that trust, that ultimate faith and hope in God. And that just, like, that powerful statement of Elizabeth, like, recognizing that in Mary is just, oh yeah. Okay. Just go back to trust. Just go back to trust. Go back to God's not going to leave me in this. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And this time of year, we're reminded of that, you know, fulfillment 2000 years ago, and we're reminded of the fulfillment that keeps happening.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the midst of several global conflicts right now. And, you know, I wrote about it in the book, and one of my favorite stories is the Christmas Truce of 1914. Mm-hmm. That, you know, during that bloody conflict, the first time the entire world was engaged in a conflict. I mean, that, talk about hopelessness, like, oh my God, the whole world is on fire. And so they had a ceasefire on Christmas of 1914. And that allowed the soldiers in the trenches to come out to the Germans and the English and French would come out and play football with each other. And, you know, for one day, that ceasefire allowed them to have a sense of fraternity and social brotherhood that they were, the previous day they were trying to shoot each other. And so there's these moments, these things during the holidays that we see. And, you know, again, we trust that even in the conflict we're in right now, there is the certain that peace does have the final word. How long that takes to get there, it involves our engagement and our work for justice and our work for peace. But, it is possible. And the holidays are reminders of that trust that we're supposed to have, because every now and then it does come true.
Yeah. So I don't know if you're a big fan of opera, but there is an opera, Silent Night, which is all about that 1914 truce. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah. And it's called Silent Night. So there you go. Before we go, I wanted to thank you again for reaching out to me, but thank you for being available for the laity here in the Archdiocese of Newark and for giving us your thoughts about evangelization and what all we have to be hopeful for, and also for your work on this book. I mean, this is, it's great. It's real. People should get it. It's great. It's Hope for the Holidays. It's put out by Paulus Press. And we'll have the link in the show notes and everything, and people can get a copy.
I wrote this book for two reasons. For anyone who's listening to this, and chances are if you're listening to a podcast on evangelization, get two copies. And not just to increase book sales, but one for yourself, because you need to have, everyone needs to kind of have that. And I wrote this also so that you could give it to someone else. So if somebody is themselves searching for a sense of hope or a sense of light, and maybe this dark time of year is hard for them, give them a copy, and maybe this can help them as well. So but start with yourself and give it to someone else, and hopefully that might draw them a little closer. My challenge in the book is the end. One of my favorite lines in A Christmas Carol is an often underseen moment in Scrooge's story, which is he went to church after that long night of that long dark night of the soul that Scrooge had in the story. Dickens says the first thing he does after he gets up is he goes to church. There's one version, the Patrick Stewart version in 1999, that shows us that. Most other versions skip over that scene, but he goes to church so that, you never know where that end will be. And hopefully maybe this can be something to encourage people to say, if you're going through your own dark night, perhaps find some light, find some hope. And then just like the 10th leper who was cured by Jesus, come back in thanksgiving to the Lord and allow that to fulfill all the hopes that you found at the holidays. So,
amen.
So that's my hope. That's my prayer. And again, thank you very much, Jennifer, for your ministry and for the work you're doing and for the work that people who are listening to this podcast are doing every day. It's hard work evangelizing, but there is great hope. I see it nationally, and I think that is just keep at it and know that we're praying and working alongside you in this effort.
Amen. Well, thank you so much, Paul, and God bless you and happy holidays.
Exactly. Same to you.
Thank you.
Heart of the Ark podcast is an initiative by the Office for Evangelization at the Archdiocese of Newark. If you want to find us online, you can find us at rcan.org/evangelization. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. Very soon we'll be updating our social media for the Heart of the Ark, but you can find us on Fireside Podcasts at Heart of the Ark. Fireside.fm. Our theme song is composed by and orchestrated by Eric Hunter, a dear friend of mine. You can find out more about Eric and his performances and compositions at Eric, E-R-I-C, Hunter, H-U-N-T-E-R, music.com. This has been a pleasure, and I look forward to hearing from you and speaking with you in the future.